Okay, we are video conferencing to Carson City today as well. We have two administrative docket matters on. The first one I'd like to call is ADKT-126, regarding alternatives to traditional litigation, and the ADKT petition filed by myself and Judge Bulla from the Court of Appeals. I see Judge Bulla is here. Judge, would you approach and maybe you could testify in support of the petition?
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I am here on petition ADKT number 126, which is set to amend the Nevada Arbitration Rule 18. Unfortunately, as the rule is currently written, there is an internal inconsistency in the rule that finally was brought to my attention, and that is that if a party takes the full 30 days to pay their share of the arbitration costs before they can actually validate their trial de novo, the opposing party won't know whether the fees are paid or not until the 31st day. And then if that opposing party wants to file a motion to strike, it will be untimely because it's a mandatory dismissal, and that's been consistent with both the rulings of the Nevada Supreme Court and the Nevada Court of Appeals. So the way to address that is to simply allow an additional 14 days for a party to file a motion to strike, should that be relevant. If the party asking the trial de novo has failed to pay their arbitration fees. So I think it addresses the current concern in the rule. You might ask, well, why not just increase the time frame for all motions to strike? I think the problem with doing that is that we certainly want to encourage parties to file their motions to strike timely, especially if they deal with other issues such as conducting the arbitration in bad faith, for example. So it's very critical that I think we define a second time period for a motion to strike based on failure to pay arbitrator's fees. And that would be the recommendation. Nothing in the change to the rule prevents the district court from sua sponte either dismissing or striking a trial de novo based on the failure to pay the fees, and that language was included to let the district court judges know that they can do that on their own as well.
Okay, thank you, Judge. Are there any questions from members of the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I do have one, Judge.
Justice Hardesty.
Judge?
Yes.
I'm not sure I understand the distinction between allowing someone to file a motion to strike because of unpaid fees versus allowing someone to file a motion to strike based upon a bad faith filing of the trial de novo request. We have had a number of examples in which those claims are being made, and it seems like a party who wants to challenge a bad faith filing should be allowed to do so. And it would seem like an example, or at least a fact that would be considered in the context of a bad faith filing, is the fact that you filed it at 5 p.m. on the 30th day.
I think there's a distinction qualitatively between filing a motion to strike for bad faith conduct during the arbitration proceeding versus filing the motion to strike the de novo based on failure to pay the arbitrator's fees. You can file the motion to strike for bad faith conduct within a 30-day time frame. There should be no problem in doing that because you have completed the arbitration. So if there are issues that arise during the arbitration, you would know that certainly within that 30-day time frame. The problem is paying the arbitrator's fees that you must pay before you can validate that trial de novo. And those fees can be paid up through the 30th day.
But so, I must be missing something. There's no reason for me to initiate a motion to strike until the trial de novo request has been made.
Well, this is 30 days after the trial de novo request is made.
Okay.
So that's part of the problem. The party who is seeking the trial de novo, at the time they file it, must certify that either the arbitrator's fees have been paid or they will be paid within 30 days. So if they take that full 30 days to pay those fees, the other side may not know whether or not they've been paid until day 31. And at that point, filing the motion to strike the trial de novo is too late. Therefore, we just need to give the parties who are moving to strike the trial de novo based on failure to pay the arbitrator's fees, we just need to give them a little bit more time to do that. The reason I picked 14 days is to be consistent with our new rules and the calendaring. And I felt that 14 would certainly give a party time to determine whether or not the arbitrator fees have been timely paid and to take whatever action then they felt was appropriate.
And just one other question, probably a lack of my familiarity with this program for a long time, but why wouldn't we have a rule that requires the fees to be paid at the time that the trial de novo request is made? And if it's not paid, the clerk would reject it.
That is a very reasonable question. I think the answer in part to that question is sometimes the arbitrator's fee is in dispute. And under Rule 18, there's a different procedure in place for disputing the fee. So it may be that that would have to go through a separate process, but you would still then give them 14 days to file their motion to strike once the fee has not been paid. And that might vary. If there is no dispute on the fee, then they get a full 30 days. If there is a dispute, then it goes through a little bit different process. But I absolutely hear what you're saying, and I think that that may at some point be a rules change to consider.
So it seemed like if there's a dispute over it, you would still require the party filing the trial de novo request to tender the full fee and then allow the process to work out with the clerk holding the fee.
That would require probably more changes to Rule 18 than
what have been currently submitted. Thank you very much for
the
information. It's helpful.
Any more questions for Judge Bulla? Okay, Judge, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in Las Vegas wishing to testify on ADKT 126? Seeing none, is there anyone in Carson City that wishes to testify on ADKT 126? Seeing none, we will close the hearing on ADKT 126 and take this matter under submission. By the way, I neglected to mention at the beginning of these proceedings, both Justices Stiglitz and Perriger need to be in Reno today, so that's why they're not here, and they wanted me to condole their regrets for not being able to be here this afternoon. Okay, thank you, Judge, for coming down to speak. Okay, let's go to next to Administrative Docket Number 507, In Re Creation of a Commission on Guardianships, and I'd ask Justice Hardesty to open the proceedings with remarks.
Thank you, Chief. Petition filed in this matter raises two issues for the court's consideration. One is the adoption of a second set of rules generated by our Rules Committee, or by the Commission's Rules Subcommittee, and approved by the Commission. There's some qualifications to one of these that I'll refer to in a minute. And then secondly, and importantly, after a tremendous amount of work by Hank Cavalera and many others on the Commission, we are tendering to the court a mediation process and policies and procedures manual for guardianship mediation. And there are some responses here that make some really good suggestions about a few edits that we should consider. I think we should take these up separately. I would first address the rules issue. There is a clarification to the rules, and it's largely discussed, or it is discussed, in Daniel Reed's letter to the court, which was filed on October 7th, 2019, it points out that Rule 7 of the proposed committee rule is unnecessary in light of the successful work of Justice Givens and Justice Pickering's committee to revise Rule 6 of the NRCPs. So, and the commission, by the way, voted unanimously to adopt the request to withdraw the adoption of Rule 7. Beyond that, I would commend to the court the approval of the remaining rules. With regard to the mediator policies and procedures, I think this has been an important piece of our overall effort to effectuate significant reforms in the guardianship process. Repeatedly, we have heard input from a number of members of the original commission, the public, and the permanent commission about the benefits that can be enjoyed through the mediation process in these guardianship issues. I'm grateful to have input from Mr. Cavallari. He makes a couple of very good edited suggestions, which I endorse. And I also, the court is in receipt of a letter from Margaret Crowley, dated October 9th, which also makes some valuable suggestions, which we'll need to discuss, and I commend to the court. I think this is a big step forward for us to adopt this process, and I think there'll be a number of cases, if not made mandatory, that will voluntarily take advantage of the guardianship mediation process. So, commend those two to the court.
Okay, thank you, Justice Hardesty. Any questions for Justice Hardesty from the members of the court? Okay. Hearing none, I would invite anyone in, first of all, in Las Vegas who would wish to testify on the administrative docket 507. Nobody's coming forward, so let's go next to Carson City. Is there anybody present in Carson City who would like to testify on administrative docket number 507? Yes, sir, if you'd come forward, please, and state your name and spell your name for the record, please.
May it please the court, Henry Cavallera, C-A-V-A-L-L-E-R-A. Mr. Chief Justice, I'm a member of the Permanent Commission on Guardianships. I only wanted to bring forth that the fact that this manual is before the court, it's really been in, developed over 28 years. It started back in 1991 when the Center for Social Gerontology started doing some experimental pilot projects of mediation and adult guardianship. The state of Alaska then adopted such a program in 2005. This manual is borrowed from the state of Alaska. It's edited a bit to meet our own circumstances. And the reason why I selected it is because the Center for Social Gerontology continues to work with the state of Alaska as a consulting agency. This manual and the operation of the mediation program in Alaska has been called a model, and that was done by the Canadian Center for Elder Law. I thought it was kind of a little bit of a strange organization to cite before the court, but two of the fellows of the center in Canada are former presidents of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys here in the U.S. And finally, I would note that in relationship to the manual, one of the things is I think the manual complies with the Americans with Disability Act, and that is because in Policy 8, there's a provision in there for power balancing to make sure that the rights of the adult that's participating in mediation are protected, that there aren't issues of the positioning of the parties in the mediation room to for intimidation, those kinds of things. And the biggest part is that we've already started the process and have implemented the process of having court-appointed attorneys for all the people that are respondents in the guardianship cases. So I would ask the court to adopt this as a part of the operation of guardianships in our state. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Cavallaro. Any questions from the court for Mr. Cavallaro?
I do.
Justice Hardesty?
Mr. Cavallaro, are you familiar with the letter that Ms. Crowley tendered to the court as a comment on the manual and on the procedures?
I am not, Your Honor.
Okay. One of the recommendations or requests that she makes, and my recollection is that our commission debated this, it had to do with whether the mediations would be voluntary or mandatory. My memory is, but I'm asking you to help me out here, is that we elected that this program should be voluntary, not mandatory. But I wanted to get your thoughts on this and see if you could recall how we addressed that.
Well, I think it's if a party to a guardianship wants to request the mediation, I think they can do it under the rule that is implemented here. They can do it at the time right. They file the petition, or it can be done at any time, even after the guardianship is established. Also, I do think that the court has the power to refer the parties to mediation in a contested case.
Right.
So I think we're okay on that. If we have to change the wording, I think we can do it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Any more questions for Mr. Cavallaro? Thank you, Mr. Cavallaro, for coming into Carson City today to testify. And thank you again for all your work with the commission and your efforts in this. Okay. Is there anyone else in Carson City who wishes to testify on Administrative Docket Number 507? Yes, sir. Please come forward. And again, would you state your name and spell your last name for the record, please?
Good afternoon. May it please the court. James Conway, Conway. I am the Executive Director of Washoe Legal Services. And we, of course, represent protected persons under guardianship in Washoe County and several rural jurisdictions as well. I just wanted to testify briefly in support of the ADKT. In particular, I wanted to note my appreciation for Rule 10 that spells out the duties of attorneys representing protected persons. We have, wanted to formalize that for a while to make sure the representation that protected persons receive is consistent across the state. And I feel that this rule, in particular, like I said, Rule 10, is absolutely essential to making sure that protected persons have meaningful due process rights in guardianship proceedings. I also wanted to thank Justice Hardesty for his leadership on the Guardianship Commission, and I wanted to thank both Jim Berchtold of the Legal Aid Center of Southern Nevada and Jennifer Richards from my office, who put a great deal of effort into drafting the rules as part of the Rules Subcommittee. Thank you, and I'll be happy to address any questions you might have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Conway. Are there any questions from Mr. Conway here from the court? Hearing none, Mr. Conway, thank you so much for, again, coming down from Reno to Carson City to testify here today.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else wish to testify? Yes, sir, come on up.
Good afternoon. I am Michael Keane, K-E-A-N-E. I am a private practitioner mainly in Washoe County, but I practice in Northern Nevada and the rural counties. I am also a member of the Permanent Guardianship Commission. I am in favor of the rules, and I had a large part in drafting the rules regarding guardian ad litems and attorneys, and be happy to answer any questions you may have. I'd like to testify in support of requiring mediation in cases and including a provision in there. I understand Mr. Cavallaro was advising that a court can order mediation in a case, and I agree with him. In a guardianship case, it is important that the protected person, in my opinion, be the center of the proceedings. And I think it's important where a protected person and or their counsel, and in under the new rules, almost always will be through their counsel, where the protected person requests mediation on an issue, it should be mandatory. Other parties, guardians, especially in family guardianship cases, the guardian or interested party should not have the ability to bypass alternative dispute resolution. And so I ask you I'm in support of a mandatory provision for mediation where the request comes from the protected person in or their counsel. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Keene. Any questions for Mr. Keene? Mr. Keene, again, thank you for coming in to testify. Anybody else wish to testify here today? Yes, sir. Please come on up. Yes, ma'am, would you state your name and spell your last name for the record, please?
My name is Mallory Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N. I'm the case compliance specialist for adult guardianships at the Second Judicial District Court. I'm also a member of the Rules Subcommittee. I'd like to offer the following observations as informational with respect to the rules outlining the attorney advocate guidelines, as well as the rule concerning mandatory 3-year review hearings in cases not otherwise subject to annual hearings. This morning, Judge Walker heard two adult guardianship cases on an emergency basis. Both involved serious allegations against the guardian, which of course remained pending. In one instance, there were allegations of serious substance abuse. Another concerning allegations that a guardian's conduct may have jeopardized a protected person, very vulnerable, receipt of critical services. The point being is that neither of these cases would have come before the court but for an attorney advocate, Washoe Legal Services, on behalf of protected persons filing these emergency motions, the court would have had no idea this was going on, which brings me to my second point regarding the rule mandating at least 3-year review hearings and guardianships of the person. Both the cases at issue this morning, they were only guardianships of the person. And I would just note that under a former business as usual model, in which guardianships of the person or summary estates never had any subsequent hearings, again, we would not have received these critical updates on the protected person's care. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Any question for Ms. Nelson from the court? Hearing none, thank you again for coming in and testifying here today. Is there anybody else in Carson County that wishes to testify? Yes, sir. Please come up. I'm sorry. I can see it in the distance. Yes, ma'am. Could you state your name and spell your last name for the record, please?
My name is Dania Reed. I'm a deputy district attorney in Washoe County representing the Washoe County Public Guardian's Office. That's R-E-I-D, Reed. I'm also a member of the Guardianship Commission and co-chair of the Rules Subcommittee. I simply come to thank you for your time and to thank my colleagues for the work they've done on these rules. I, too, was a drafter, but I can't speak to anything that hasn't already been said here today, and I thank Justice Hardesty for pointing out that the recommendation was made, and I authored the letter to please disregard the Rule 7 on noticing. We have strived very hard to be consistent with both case law, existing statutes, and, of course, overriding court rules, and we strive to do that. And so I want to say thank you for your time, and thanks again to my colleagues, and I advocate for the passage of the remaining rules.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Reed. We did receive your letter on October 7th. It has been distributed to all the members of the Supreme Court, so thank you for taking time to write that. Is there any questions here for Ms. Reed? Hearing none, thank you again for coming down from Reno to testify here today.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Anybody else in Carson City wish to testify? Okay, seeing none coming out, we will, Justice Hardesty, did you want to make any closing comments?
I did. The court has had an opportunity to hear from some of the members that participate on the Permanent Guardianship Commission. And I want to thank them for attending the public hearing here today. These dedicated professionals offer a wealth of experience, talent, passion for this subject, and their ideas and contributions to the reform measures and to the measures that are being used through these rules to implement those reforms has been significant to so many lives in this state that have been touched as a result of the changes that have occurred since 2015. And personally, I'd like to extend my thanks and appreciation to those who participate in the commission and to those who attended today for their extraordinary work and their effort. This is a pretty productive commission, as you can see from our various reports. The meetings are active, entertaining, energetic, enthusiastic, and I'm so grateful to these people for their extraordinary professional contributions. And staff, Ms. Nelson has been a huge asset to the court, to the commission, for advancing extraordinary measures to improve statewide compliance, as has Riley Wilson in the 8th Judicial District. And I think their staff efforts have really allowed them to capture a number of issues surrounding guardianship that has helped a lot. One final point, Chief. I want to acknowledge Judge Schreinert's letter of October 3rd. We received it on October the 9th, in which she requests that the run rule relating to Rule 12 relating to those procedures about attendance at these hearings and the three-year review include minor guardianships. And although the commission was not in a position to vote on that because they didn't know about this before this meeting, I'm quite certain that everybody would agree with Judge Schreiner's proposal. And I had asked her following the meeting, the latest commission meeting, to submit this letter before we had our hearing. So I would note that for the record. Other than that, my thanks go to the court for taking the time to hold a public hearing on these rules and the mediation process.
Okay. Thank you, Justice Hardesty. Any other justice wish to make any closing comments on that? Okay, hearing none, I will declare this public hearing closed, and we will take this matter under submission, and the court will be in recess until the next call.